ever wondered how many people were killed by stabbing across all episodes of Columbo? Would you consider calculating the number of iPhones that could fit into a cargo plane by weight or volume? Do you think you could beat an elephant barehanded? Well, do you, punk? If any of these questions interest you, stay tuned. If not, may I suggest Richard Osman's House of Games on YouTube. For the five-ish people still listening, welcome to Inestimable! I'm your scorekeeper, Tony Sindelar, he, him, and I will be somehow convinced to sign a form assuming all financial responsibilities for the outcome of this game. Not really sure how. I make a lot of mistakes, but I'm not the host. You need to really, really know I am not the host. I will not accept any of the blame for that. Here's the man, legally and morally responsible for what's to follow, Glenn Fleischman!
Hey, thank you, Tony. Yes, this is Inestimable, where a panel of contestants answer questions about things they don't know, but have to, estimate and compete against a live audience of incomparable network members who are listening live to this narrowcast. Questions require answers in the forms of numbers, ranges, or comparisons. Knowledge may be rewarded, but sometimes it's punished. Up to 5 points in whole integers. Yes, whole integers are awarded for proximity to the right answer, and there's some different points for different rounds depending on what the question's nature is. You may be able to even get bonus points if you're wrong in a funny way. You may want paper and pen. That may be helpful, but if you don't have it, it's the paperless office, so nobody has it. So let me welcome this episode's panelists who definitely volunteered to be on this episode and were not forced by contractual obligation. Brian, their name anagrams to Brian. Brian Hamilton.
NARB, please. Anagrams to NARB.
My mistake. Give her 2 minutes and she can solve any Rubik's Cube. It's Liz Miles.
Hello. I did not know what this was before I signed up for it.
This is perfect. This is according to all plans. For legal reasons, I can only say Jason Snell.
Well, thank you, Tony, and thank you, Tony's sidekick, Glenn.
Thank you. And bienvenue, notre Canadienne, Annette Wierstra.
Merci. Je si.
All right. And we are
I don't even know if that's right French. I took it for 12 years. I don't know.
That is, therefore, the perfect Canadian. All right. Oui. So I have introduced the panelists in the order of play as determined by BB Edit's Sort Randomize feature, eatitrandom.org. Also joining us is an audience of incomparable members. They are listening in via a live stream, and they'll be providing answers at the same time as panelists. Their answers will be averaged or normalized, whatever Tony can possibly stand doing in real time. And so the audience could actually win the game because we love our listeners. Psst, go to incomparable.com/members to find out more about becoming a supporter of our network. Tony, what did you agree to?
I mean, there's not really an option here, right? So let's just do it.
Yes, it's too late to back out now. I still have. Well, we'll talk about that later.
Oh, Tony hung up. I guess it wasn't too late.
So let's go on to round one. It is quantities of things. So, for instance, I might ask, "How many keys on a grand piano?" When everyone says
2.
70
major
something?
Or minor.
111.
72.
Wow. Okay. 88.
Glenn, all, you're, Glenn?
Yeah.
No, there's.
Oh, that's bones Brian of the human body,
correct.
And it's wrong.
2. There's black keys and white keys.
Oh, holy cow. Well, that's a negative 1 point for Tony to start with. Let's put that in the scoreboard. And so let's think a little bit grander in this round. Your question is, ding, 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 how many Hindenburgs does it take to fill the Grand Canyon? How many Hindenburgs does it take to fill the Grand Canyon?
For my work, please answer in a number of Hindenburgs. If you give me some other aircraft and ask me to convert it to Hindenburgs, I will not.
No. You can't answer in no Piper Cubs, no Boeing 787s. So the Hindenburg was named LZ-129. LZ is for Luftschiffbau Zeppelin, and Luftschiffbau means airship. It's pretty boring. It's not like one of those fun German words, just Luftschiffbau.
So is this like intact Hindenburgs, or are you like mashing them all up?
No, this is edge to edge.
The humanity!
Fully inflated.
We're pretending there is no space between their rounded edges, so it's the volume of Hindenburgs inside the volume of the Grand Canyon.
They have been perfectly stacked together.
But I think we've given you enough leeway on the correct answer that if you answered considering this as like a tennis ball stacking problem or a cube stacking problem, you will get 5 points either way if you're close.
Right, so this isn't a thing you could practically do. It's like a theoretical.
It's
welcome to the game, Liz Miles.
Yes.
Woo! Liz, he says like smart guessing. It's wild guessing.
Yeah. This is a wild guessing round.
Wild guess chase. Liz, this was a popular thing. I don't know if it's still popular. I think it finally died out. This was like a really popular interview question. They'd ask you like, how many windows are there on the, you know, on all the buildings on the island of Manhattan, right? And which is like a nonsense thing that they would then evaluate your problem solving by asking you to do.
Or how many marbles in a jar?
Yeah, because that has bearing on how good you are at work.
Okay.
Listener Ben asked, is this the Hindenburg the Zeppelin or Hindenburg the man? And I should point out, this is Hindenburg the Zeppelin.
Just oh, thank goodness.
We're clear.
Listeners, if this helps, imagine that in the little, you know, in the cargo area of each, yeah, the passenger compartment of each Hindenburg is a Hindenburg.
It's filled with little old little Hindenburg. German
but
presidents
does,
in the Weimar
Republic.
But
that does not impact the number of Zeppelins that can fit in the Grand Canyon. Mm-hmm.
I think I saw Hindenburg the man open for Portugal the man once.
Can we get a picture of the Grand Canyon? Okay,
he's in the Zeppelin, enabling Hitler to rise to power. Bad news, everybody.
No.
Can we have, like, can the Americans have to have a bigger penalty here or something?
Because Americans do not know how big the Grand Canyon is.
Some of us have never seen this Grand Canyon.
I have never seen the Grand Canyon.
Who has seen the Grand Canyon?
Americans. All of the Americans have.
One contestant has seen the Grand Canyon. We'll see what that helps.
Jason.
It's worth visiting. It's grand for a reason. But when you go there, it is like basically impossible to comprehend. Like you think, I don't know, at least maybe Jason's smarter than me. But I look at it like it's the thing where it's like, am I looking at a photo? I don't understand how this thing is so big and so wide and deep and massive. And the idea that that experience, having been there, inform me in any way is also I'm not playing the game, but if I was, I'd be bad at it.
Okay.
Also,
I feel good about my big number now.
Also,
I
when
worried.
I went there on a road trip, one of the people I was traveling with stole a rock from the Grand Canyon, and the Grand Canyon is full of signs saying "Do not steal the rocks from the Grand Canyon," and I'm still mad about that.
I would have stolen a rock. Is that
do
wrong?
Not steal? They
like a pebble?
What's sad is that if you go into the gift store, you can buy rocks that are elsewhere.
Tony, that person is still haunted by a ghost coyote to this
I
day.
I just think don't steal rocks, people. All right.
Don't steal rocks, people.
Where are the public accessible? Like, can I take them from the beach? Is that still okay? Or rivers?
Just don't take them from
depends
a national park.
Depends which beach.
Park.
You can't take them from beaches.
Oh,
you can take, I believe in England, you could take cockles from the shore, but that's
well,
all
excuse
that I know.
Me?
Look, I didn't name them.
It's not
you know,
and
here's,
kind of
a, here's my fun fact for this round is I was married in a former dirigible hangar, in fact, not a current one. That would have been very uncomfortable. All right, let's start with the answers from panelists first, and then we'll look at how the audience responded. So we're going to start with Brian. Brian, how many Hindenburg Zeppelins do you think would fit into the Grand Canyon?
I recently watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade a few weeks ago. I think dirigibles are a lot bigger than I think they actually are. So I put 6.
All right, 6. 6 is on the board. Jason, a little bit higher.
Yep, I have been to the Grand Canyon, and so I said 8 million.
8 million?
That's we have good. A range. We have a range.
That's a range. Annette said, what were you thinking about this?
Well, funnily enough, my source material is the same as Brian's. And I was like,
nothing?
No ticket.
No.
It's like, that's... You know, Indiana Jones, he's on it. It's pretty big. But also I know the Grand Canyon is very big. And I picked a random, not round number for fun, 373 Hindenburgs.
373 Hindenburgs. And all right. And Liz, we got a number here.
Yeah. Looks like... I did some very scientific research. Oh, you can't see it. But it's got a drawing of 3 Hindenburgs and a canyon and some little tourists here.
Nice.
And it does only have 3, but I thought that was probably the wrong answer. It seems like it's big. So I put the very reasonable 1 million Hindenburgs.
1 million Hindenburgs.
Yes.
All right, so we got a range there. Tony, what was the audience's average?
Well, the audience had a really nice range of answers. I will say all of them, I think, were 4 digits or significantly higher. I have calculated the audience average is 13,668,617 Hindenburgs.
The average? What was the highest, Tony?
Somebody put 100 million. Somebody else put 200 million.
Those are my people.
We need to start taxing these these 100 million
Hindenburgers.
They're the one percenters who can afford 100 million Hindenburgs.
Brian, this is how they don't win.
And why are they parking them in the Grand Canyon? That belongs to all of us.
Should they be paying natural...
Not Annette and Liz, of course.
All right, so let's get some facts. So the Hindenburg, which was the name of a class of airship, not a specific one, it occupied the space of, the volume of, 7 million cubic feet or 200,000 cubic meters. The Grand Canyon is a little bit bigger at 147 trillion cubic feet or 4.17 trillion cubic meters. So the actual answer is about 21 million Hindenburgs would fit into the Grand Canyon. So close.
So
amazing.
So the audience, I think, gets 5 points because they're pretty, that's pretty good.
Yeah, okay, 5 points to the audience.
I think 5 points for the audience, and
uh-oh.
I know, yeah. I know. And now here comes the sad part. I think, you know, Jason, also not too far off, so I think that's, is that four, Tony? Will we agree, four?
I think that's reasonable, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 4 points to Jason.
I mean, I was really close and yet also off by about 12 million, so.
You were in the millions, at least.
Here's what I'd say is, you know, there are no winners and there are no losers because this was an impossible, well, all right, well, we'll talk about that later. This is an impossible round. This is an impossible thing because none of us have the capacity to perceive that much space. So,
okay, but
I
six?
Think six? Well, I would have given Brian.
I was not sure, having never been to the Grand Canyon, is it actually that big?
It's
and
really
having
big.
Never seen a Hindenburg, really is it big. Really, 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 really big?
It's really big, but there's an order of magnitude issue here.
I do feel like I want to see it now, to be fair.
I do too.
Oh, there we go.
So this is pretty amazing. Tourism, this is working quite well.
This round has been sponsored by the National Park Service, about to be shut down.
Yeah, I was going to say, get it while you can before they fill it in.
They're closing up the Grand Canyon.
Well, they're Hindenburg parking.
It's the Canyon of America now.
All right, part of America.
Over the top of it.
Therefore, will be shut down.
Yes. Glenn, refocusing, I see that you've given Jason 4 points. How many points do you want to give for...
I want to give Annette 2 and Brian 1. I know it's too much, but we got to start kind.
Did I get any?
I take your pity point.
Oh, I told Liz should get 3 points for that.
Yeah, for being in the millions.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then,
yeah.
You know, let's start out nice, and then we'll get more and more cruel.
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of, lot of room to go down from here. Good job, audience. You know, that's well done. You know?
Tony, let's do just a very quick score recap after the first one.
The numbers are what you
confusing.
Just said. Why would you mind?
Where is the audience in that? It seems like the audience might be in first place,
Glenn,
right now.
The scores have gone up because they were all zero before. The audience is in first place with 5 points. Jason is in second place with 4 points. Liz, third place with 3 points. Wait, is that how that works? Annette, fourth place with 2 points. Brian, still in it. It could be anyone's game. 1 point.
Does that mean that everything is a game where everyone has 0 points until points are assigned?
This is exactly...
Everything's a potential game?
Tony has got his new
Welcome
book.
Welcome to capitalism.
So let's move on to round two. Round two is called Will It Be Pope Pizza Ball? This one is about the Billboard's Hot 100 Singles. The Billboard's Hot 100 Singles measures the yearly position by sales of a given song. So we can look at this as a snapshot of history. And so for this round, we're going to do 1991. And the song is Losing My Religion, right? A great REM title. Your job is to guess what its rank from 1 to 100 in the year 1991 was. Where did that rank? And I'll give you some more information as we go on. It reached its top position for the year, which was number 4, during the week of June 22nd, 1991. It lasted 21 weeks on the weekly chart. So the other facts for 1991, the number one song by sales for the year was Everything I Do It For You by Bryan Adams. REM was also number 100 in single sales that year for Shiny Happy People. This is the year of Groove Is in the Heart, OPP, and DNA's unauthorized remix of Suzanne Vega's Tom's Diner. If you remember that was very big
just
in my crowd.
Mm-hmm. To help you out here, your answer is going to be a number.
A number?
It's going to be a
between
number between
1 and 100.
1 and 100. And Glenn just told you what number 1 and number 100 is, so I recommend not using those numbers.
Okay. Eliminated two possibilities
for
that year.
Was this a popular song then? Was it played enough that people were very annoyed by it?
It got to number 4.
It was number
4. I was surprised that it was where it was in the rankings given how popular it was. There's a hint.
Excellent. Oh. Okay.
So it was, I mean, by basically being on the top 100, Liz, it's some level of popular. The question for you is, how popular on a scale from,
I don't know, if they're like a number 78. I have no idea who that is. There's names.
You
that...
don't know who REM is?
No, I don't. Well, actually, yes. Yes, I do.
I'm just asking questions.
But I was actually surprised that the DNA that Suzanne Vega's Tom's Diner remix, I remember it being very popular, but I think it was popular for like...
That's enough.
All right. We can't pay. You're bankrupting yourself, Jason.
Yeah.
I think it was very popular for like a week. Same thing with like Groove Is in the Heart. That felt like it was everywhere. I just heard it the other day too. It was being played, but I think it was like 2 weeks, right?
Losing My Religion was on the Hot 100 for 40% of the year. So that's pretty
exactly.
Amazing.
So this is how well did it do for the year? Do folks have answers come
people
in?
People put in answers. I've got a bunch of answers from the audience.
And for all of you whippersnappers out there, I'll just say, this is my junior year in college. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
this was the year I graduated from high school.
I was almost at school, so that's fun.
Nice.
I was in the working world by then. Working as a, I don't know what I was
doing. We got a whole range. Brian Hamilton was not yet born.
Yeah, wasn't I'm sure there was some other music out that year that I know about, but I was not there to listen to it.
Listener Ben says they were -2 in 1991, just so we can all feel
that's
good.
Accurate. Thank you, Listener Ben, for doxing me a little bit.
So let's go and look at this is easy because there are only 100 positions and I took two away. So obviously it should be much more straightforward. Brian came in at number 12.
That is a number. Good job, Brian.
Yay!
Thank you.
Annette came in at 23.
Number.
Liz,
woo!
At 18. And Jason,
number
68.
Number.
Well, and let's see, what is the audience's average response?
I have averaged the audience's average responses, which range from
299.
No, I think the highest number anyone gave it was 14, and the lowest was 72, and they average out to a really nice 39. Let me just check. Did anyone in the audience get it
No,
perfect?
But pretty close, though.
Bunch of people were close, but nobody got it perfect.
Nobody got
it
exactly. Well, so I can reveal at this point, I can reveal the secret, which is the answer is 33. So, in fact, Jason, I'm sorry, you were very far off, but everyone else was fairly close. And the way we score this round is you can get 1 point by being within 20 positions, up to 5 points for being exactly right. So that means that Jason gets none, unfortunately. Annette gets... 4 points. Yep, 4 points for Annette, and then 2 points for Brian and Liz.
And how would you like to reward the audience? The audience was within six, basically, right?
Audience is going to get 4 points, I think.
Wow. Audience is
pretty good. I mean, that's pretty close.
Yeah.
Audience is, so this might actually be, if you're ready, this might be an appropriate time to look at scores, even though it's just been two rounds.
Well, Glenn, let me tell you, the audience is in a commanding lead with 9 points. You know, when I think about the audience, I just think about them as kind of like the average of the best of us, which is better than average. Who else is playing this game? Annette, 6 points. Liz has jumped up to 5 points. Jason has dropped down to 4. And Brian still playing the game with 3 points. But anything could happen because there's like a lot more rounds to go.
There's a lot of points.
My God, so many more rounds. And some of them are fast, maybe? Maybe.
So round three is coming up. This round is called the Royal Flush. The Royal Flush. So this is the round that everyone hated when I tested this game show. In the two iterations of the game we've run so far, I was told in no uncertain terms by many people, don't do this to us again.
So
here we are.
So
here we are. It's back. It's back. But I swear to God, it's better than before. There's a formula for how to earn points this time, and Tony will have a formula that will let him score. My God, maybe I'll make it out of here alive. I don't know. We'll find out. Okay, so in this round, I'll reveal what the topic is shortly. I've hinted at it by the title, Royal Flush. I'm going to give you a list of 5 things that you will put in order from most to least. You get 5 points for getting all 5 in order. Otherwise, you get 1 point for each position in the ranking that you're correct. So if you get positions 1, 3, and 5 right, that's 3 points. If you get all positions right, you get 5 points. If you get position 2 right, that's 1 point. So very straightforward, and we have a formula in our spreadsheet. So Tony does not have to...
You are so proud of the spreadsheet.
Well, I just didn't want to be hunted down like sport in the, you know, after this. This round is called the Royal Flush because you'll need to put in order from the most to least number of toilets in the following facilities. I will share some facts after listening to them. So listen first, and then I'll give you a few more pieces of information to help you decide. So the five facilities are the Hartsfield Jackson Atlanta International Airport in Georgia, America, the busiest airport in the world, the Michigan Stadium in Ann Arbor, Michigan, the largest stadium in the United States, Wembley Stadium in London, one of the largest stadiums in the world, the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, still the tallest building in the world at this writing, at this recording, and finally... And finally, the West Edmonton Mall in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, the second largest mall in the area of North America. And we have an Edmonton resident here on the show.
Who used to work at West Edmonton Mall for quite a few years.
I hope you were counting toilets and comparing them to those and other facilities.
Yes, I've seen none of these other places, so it is useless knowledge.
All right, so here is the important thing. So, Tony, are a toilet and a urinal the same thing?
This is not robot or not. I refuse to respond to your question.
All right, fair enough. But the source material that we used, I'm sorry, this is my fault that I used, to count the number of toilets.
It keeps getting used in these descriptions.
It does not differentiate between, say, bowl toilets that, like, you can sit down on, and a urinal. You can sit down in a urinal if you try hard enough, I guess, too. Those are both counted as toilets. So toilet is either a bowl toilet or a urinal. We're counting those in total. So this is not the number of bowl toilets, number of
also,
things with water in them.
I'm just going to tell you, if you're arguing about that, it already doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. So I can give you some facts because they won't actually affect the ordering system, which is the Atlanta airport carried 110 million passengers in 2024, exceeding its previously busiest year in 2019. The next busiest airport in Dubai carried only about 92 million passengers. Let's see. The Burj Khalifa has a scurrilous tale about it that its sewage system was all trucks, that they basically trucked away all the sewage every day. And this is, in fact, some weird lie that got spread for unknown reasons. They are tied into the sewer system. Can you imagine a building that is 829.8 meters tall or 2,722 feet, that all their sewage would be taken away by trucks? You cannot, because it is not true. It has a solid waste facility built in. It is connected to the city's sewage system. Stop lying about the Burj Khalifa. That's all I'll say.
Which one's the
Burj Khalifa is the tallest building in the world in Dubai, United Arab Emirates.
You know, Glenn, I was recently in Memphis, Tennessee, where I rode the elevator to the top of the giant pyramid that is also a Bass Pro Shop. And as you're riding in the freestanding elevator, North America's tallest freestanding elevator, you have time to think about things, like the fact that there is a bar and bathrooms up at the top of the pyramid. And as you're traveling upward, you look at all the tubes that are also traversing that space and thinking, well, that's where the plumbing goes. So I have thought about speaking of the Burj Khalifa, the long drop required from if you go to the bathroom on the top floor.
Gravity fed. You know, I think Edmonton is not just one of the largest malls in the world at 490,000 cubic meters, square meters rather, cubic would be more difficult, or 5.3 million square feet, 32 million visitors a year. But I think it's the number one concentration of incomparable hosts and panelists in the world across all of our programs, right? Isn't it? Edmonton has like 7 people who contribute to the incomparable?
Possibly.
Somerville's got to be like second place.
It might be. Yep. It's probably second, but maybe distant.
Oh, wait, is Somerville a real place?
It's more of a state of mind.
As a sports fan, one of the things that you have to grapple with when you're thinking about stadium toilets is the fact that traditionally in many places, at least in the United States, I don't know about in the UK, that the men's rooms, in order to facilitate the highest volume of output, created a thing that is basically a very large trough that men just pee into, which is not a urinal, really, or if it is, it's just one for a high volume of people, and that therefore it made me really concerned about the number of toilets in a stadium, because older facilities might use the classic trough instead
of
a modern.
For the love of God, what century are you in?
It does not seem like a thing that we would have in society. Like, yeah. It is exactly one step up from just a hole.
As things have been renovated, the troughs have been replaced because they're not up to code. But in places where they still remain, they are there.
Fenway My favorite Park being is a celebration of tradition.
At Stanford Stadium, the bathrooms are outside because that place is lousy. And they have a little window cut out above them. And therefore, you can stand there going into the trough while looking out at people looking at you going
That's
into the trough.
Classy.
Just, you know, neck up, but still very
Why?
Disconcerting.
You know,
like, I'm peeing now.
Why?
Also, I can never find the bathrooms at the mall, so I think they're not there. I don't believe they exist.
I have a lot of follow-up questions I don't want to ask.
I know where they all are in West Edmonton Mall.
I don't want to know anything about this subject ever again. This is
The results are in, and this round sucked, Glenn. It sucked. Oh, that's me saying that to myself.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you know, people told me I shouldn't do it, and here we are. So, Tony, so there are
don't
possible
bring me into this.
There are a possible 5 points that could be awarded here. Did anybody get 5 points?
According to your formula, no.
Did anyone? I'm trying to think if anyone got. Did anyone get 4 points? Possibly.
No.
Did anyone get? All right. Well, let's go all the way down.
One
to
of the
zero.
Audience. One of the audience members got 3 points. Unfortunately, their 3 points is then averaged with many lower numbers. So special shout out to Paul A, who did the best on this question among all audience and panelists.
Paul A, we respect your knowledge of facilities.
Paul Thomas Anderson, I love your work. Mm.
There's even some, there were some secret points if you got a couple things or 3 things in order, which we are going to grant. And nobody got any sequences in order either. So essentially, everything was random and none of it matched. So let's just...
I think this is a valuable lesson about playtesting.
This took so long.
Yes. All right, well... Let's look at the answers here. So of the correct order, let's look at the correct order first. So the correct order was Wembley, which claims 2,618 toilets. Okay. Burj Khalifa, number two, at about 2,000. Hmm. A little hard to figure out exactly, but it seems to be the accurate number. The Atlanta airport has 1,063. That is 725 commodes and 338 urinals. They do break it out. West Edmonton Mall has about 500 across 30 public restroom areas. And Michigan Stadium, about 400 across 20 to 25 public restroom areas. So, Tony, who got something right there on the panel?
So, I am seeing that Liz gets a point. What did Liz get correct?
Liz was correct with the West Edmonton Mall in fourth position.
Next to last. And Annette gets a point for having Michigan Stadium last.
Right, Annette was not a booster of the West Edmonton Mall. She did not put them first. She put them second after Burj Khalifa. But sadly, West Edmonton Mall is only number four.
It's because you can't find bathrooms at the mall. That's why.
I've scored all of the audience participation. And though we had, again, big shout out to Paul A, 3 points.
Big shout out.
A medium shout out to Rob Tarr with 2 points. No shout out to everybody else. Who unfortunately...
Tony, do I get a shout out? I want a shout out.
Not right now. Ask me again later.
Oh.
Yeah, so the average score for the listeners was 0.72, which is less than one. And I know how you feel about fractional points. Yeah, how do we 1 point.
That gets averaged up to 1 point. So that round, this is the reason why I was told not to do it. Well, you know, we've all learned something, and editing this will come out.
You learned nothing last time.
Well,
I need, for legal purposes, I need you to state right now, what did you learn?
I learned I need to do more consultation with people who do numbers before next time.
I'm just saying, even if our equations had worked correctly, which they should have, that's on us, people did very poorly.
All right, I guess toilets are not the best judge of character. Okay. So let's move on.
Glenn did promise to get meaner to us, so I
did.
That's
so there we go.
Just checking.
In the last round, you'll get negative points for everything.
For updating my scoreboard, I'm giving Liz and Annette a point.
Yes, that's correct. And the audience gets a point, too.
All right. Big swing. If you ask me for an update on the scoreboard.
Let's just move ahead to movie math. This round surely won't annoy anyone, Tony, will it? Oh, my goodness. Okay, so let's move on to round four, which is movie math. And so in this round is about adding numbers together. But you have to know some of the numbers to do it. So here's the example. The example answer is 14 and a half angry men. And the question I would have asked for that is, in a jury room, an irate group raises a child. So you take 12 angry men and you add it to 2.5 men and you get 14 and a half angry men. In a jury room, an irate group raises a child. 14 and a half angry men. All right, so that's how the game's played. You're going to do some movie
Survivor.
Math. And you're going to type in your answer and we will not give points for spelling or anything like that. So if everyone's ready, so each of these questions will have a separate answer. Here's your first question this round. Unstuck in time, this boy sees a dead narrator. And so it goes. That's your first. Houston, we have a slasher.
That could be any number of slasher movies.
Any number of slasher movies.
Very clever, Liz.
In this dystopia, you're constantly monitored by video screens in your apartment. Donald Pleasance makes an appearance. Any deviation results in jail, where rats are put on your head as you're poked by long sticks.
Nope, Glenn, you gotta redo that one. I'm sorry, my brain's going in too many places. Can you replace that one?
In this dystopia, you're constantly monitored by video screens in your apartment. Donald Pleasance makes an appearance, and any deviation results in jail, where rats are put on your head as you're poked by long sticks. Now, for me, that's my annual vacation, but this is actually a combination of two movies with numbers.
This is incredibly frustrating. It's like, I only know one from each one. Put two of the
At
ones
this point, I just want to make Tony laugh.
I just,
put two of the ones points. I know together, please.
This sequel never needed to get made. We already know which moon of Jupiter is off limits to a family of four superpower endowed heroes. I didn't mean for it to get this mean. I'm so sorry.
It'd be absolutely fine if you could just put the ones that were obvious to me in the same question. Just one of them. Just once.
It's possible to get bonus points for humor, so we'll see what happens.
There's no humor in me.
There's no humor. All right, that's, and then finally, clad only in a fur bikini, a woman throws a bone at a tall, featureless shape. And I'm going to give something away to make it easier.
I know one.
I want to caution you, remember how the math works in the title. This is a tricky one.
No, it's not. I know this one. Oh, gosh.
I apologize.
Wait, I have a calculator as well.
I guess there's a spoiler in the copying and pasting of the text because there was information in brackets. But
oh, no, that's fine. I was going to add that in and see. The woman, this is the extra clue, is Raquel Welch is the woman in the fur bikini.
Can I get a point because I didn't need the extra clue for this? Can I have an extra clue for the other three questions, please?
Clad only in a fur bikini, a woman, Raquel Welch, throws a bone at a tall, featureless sheep. All right, so Tony, that round was very straightforward and there were no issues whatsoever in getting to this point. I'm sorry, I've got a pile of old tape here that I must have cut out of the show. Okay, well, let's move on. So this was a movie math, and you've just heard all the questions. People have responses. So in looking at the answers, let me go through these one at a time, and then we will look at how people performed. So Unstuck in Time, this boy sees a dead narrator, and so it goes is Slaughterhouse 5 plus the 6 cents gets you Slaughterhouse 11th Sense. Houston, we have a slasher, gets you Friday the 13th plus Apollo 13, which gets you Friday the Apollo 26th. And then in this dystopia, you're constantly monitored by video screens in your apartment. Donald Pleasance makes an appearance, and any deviation results in jail where rats are put on your head as you're poked by long sticks. That was 1984 plus THX 1138, which gets you George Orwell's THX 3122. This sequel never needed to get made. We already know which moon of Jupiter is off limits to a family of four. Superpower endowed heroes is Fantastic Four plus 2010, which gets you Fantastic 2014.
Wait, where's the 2010 from?
2010.
The year we make contact.
Yeah it's okay. Kind of a...
I have an objection to the slasher one because I assumed it was Scream 2. And I would like to know why it's Friday the 13th and not Scream 2.
Why isn't it Friday the 13th Part 4? Why isn't it Halloween 3? Why isn't it?
I would assume because exactly. they had
because
they both have 13.
I would assume that if it was why isn't it the number one, the two numbers?
There's a lot of room for rules of arguments here. And then finally, this was the one that was, I thought, mean, but then at least two people got it right, which was clad only in a fur bikini, a woman, Raquel Welch, throws a bone at a tall, featureless shape. And the answer there is 1 million BC plus 2001, A Space Odyssey. So you get because it's BC, you have to add 2001 to it. So, as Liz did, you get 997,999 BC,
wrong.
A space
wrong.
Odyssey.
Wrong, because it's a Why? Positive number, even though it's in BC, and we're not counting years, we're adding numbers together.
No, they're both years. They're both years, so... All right. Well,
but they're numbers, Glenn.
They're numbers.
Oh, no.
I
gave this consideration, and I thought, well, no, that's not accurate, because it's all about putting numbers together. Mm. And so is 1 million BC a negative number? It's not. It's 1 no. million. That's mm-hmm. the number.
Well, I'll tell you what. I know how to split the baby on this. Sorry, baby. Is that I think Liz gets an extra clever point for that.
Okay.
Instead of taking points away by giving people zero for the other. So let's look at the results, shall we? Because then we're going to all cry. So, Jason, I don't know why you were arguing.
Are we?
Because we are going to. No,
because I got them all right, Glenn. I got them all right.
Jason actually scored a royal flush.
Why was it right to the 13th? How did you know it was right to the 13th?
Because they're both 13, right?
Because it's a slasher movie with a number in the title that's not like just a sequel count.
Exactly.
So it's right. Friday the 13th.
That was my logic.
That's terrible logic.
Again, I'm going to give you 2 points, Liz, for for your extra clever answer.
We're giving Jason the full five.
Jason gets five. Jason got all five.
Those numbers in the title to know which one it is. You know, you don't know it's Scream 2 unless you've got that 2 in it. Otherwise, it's just Scream.
It's true.
But it's also Scream 3, which means the number is also one more. But it's also Friday the 13th, Part 3. But it's also Nightmare on Elm Street, Part 5.
Yeah.
I will let you, Liz, I will let you share your bonus point for being clever with that response. So you still get one bonus point total. There you go. Then you can feel vindicated.
Given our population that there are no sequel numbers in the math would be helpful.
2 points total. Yeah. So the net got Friday the Apollo 26th. Close enough. Or exactly right, actually. And then also Brian got the same answer, Apollo 26th. I think those are all the
correct
answers.
So 1 point each to Brian and Annette, 1 point and one clever point to Liz,
exactly.
But big five to Jason.
Jason
Snell.
And then in the listener
group. Yeah, what do we do with the listeners?
The listeners are going to get 1 point because someone got 997,999 Space Odyssey, which is what I was thinking. So that's IJS Sprint.
Technically, it would have to be negative 997.
They put a negative in front of it.
Yeah.
They put
good.
A negative in front of
then,
it.
Then they deserve applause.
Do you want to give any other points? For,
I'm going to give just a 1 point total because there were only a few correct answers along
the
whole thing. So
Glenn originally intended this as an audience catch-up round.
Exactly. But the audience is so far ahead, I think it works out in the end anyway.
I would like to argue for the 14th sense, where I merge the sixth sense and sense eight on Stuck in Time.
Mm. Oh, interesting. Tony, what do you think about that?
No, it's not a movie.
Sense eight. Oh.
But neither was 2.5 Men.
Wait.
Yes, but then they specified it was all movies and the real ones, and that was just a bad example.
That's true.
Rules lawyer.
It turns
rules
out...
Lawyer.
We should run a tighter ship if we're going to be as draconian as we are.
Yes.
I just feel like we're not living up to the image of law.
We keep learning things. Okay. Well, now it is time to actually do a score check-in. Things have changed because Jason swept that round.
So you want some scores? That's what you want?
Well, I love a score check-in.
The audience, still in the lead with 11 points. But right behind them, nipping at their heels, it's Jason with 9 points, only 2 points behind. And right behind Jason, Liz and Annette, 8 points each. And then still playing the game, Brian Hamilton, 4 points. But the last round is where everything changes.
Thank goodness.
I hope so. We'll see if we can redeem ourselves. So this is the final round, round five, the one-on-one round. So in this round, I'll ask each of you questions in the randomly determined order set at the outset of the show. Each correct answer is worth 2 points to panelists. It's a great way to catch up. But I'm also going to give the audience the chance to catch up as well. If the panelist is correct, they get 2 points. If the audience is correct and the panelist is correct, the audience gets 1 point. But if the panelist gets the answer incorrect and the audience is right on average, then the audience will get 2 points. So this could be a surprise victory for the audience, although, I don't know, it's looking pretty good, like the audience might win here. So we'll see. We'll find out soon. So you're going to tell me, for each question you get, which came earlier in the history of time. The example of the works is I'd ask the invention of printing or the invention of the cat door, which came earliest.
And you would tell us the answer.
The answer
and then
is
Glenn
printing.
Would give you information.
Right. You would tell us the answer. And then I would say printing, because printing is often cited as being invented in 1450, but it's at least 1050 in China and maybe earlier. The cat door, often attributed to Isaac Newton as a joke, called a cat flap, appears in the Canterbury Tales in the 1300s. So it's at least that early, but we don't know any earlier instance. Okay, Brian, domesticated cat or domesticated dog, which came first? Which is earlier?
I believe it's domesticated cat, and I believe I'm going to attribute that to ancient Egyptians.
All right. Well, I'm sorry to say the answer is dogs, because the evidence of domesticated dogs, it traces back as far as 30,000 years across Asia and Europe. Cats, they can only trace domesticated cats back to about 10,000 years ago in the Middle East. So
it's way earlier than ancient Egyptians.
Yeah, I know. I thought cats and dogs were, co-determinant. What's the audience?
Well, with 11 responses from the audience, all 100%, which is really pretty impressive, said dog, which is the correct answer.
All right, so
0 points to Brian. How many points to the audience?
2 to the audience, because they were correct and the panelist was not.
All right.
All right, so next up is Liz. Mm. Liz. Mm. Liz.
Yes.
Beer or mead, which came first, which was invented first?
Okay.
Talk through your logic.
I've heard of mead more in the past, but I feel like it's a trick question now, because I feel like it's a trick question, but I don't know when either.
Or is it?
Oh, don't double bluff me. Because, well, the instinctive answer is mead, isn't it? But I now think
Not everything is a trick. Not everything is a trick, but of course this could be. But not everything is a trick.
But most
that's
of
what a trickster would say.
I'm 100% certain, obviously, with my own vast historical studyings in the law, that which is obviously lots of beer mainly things and mead things have come up in that. So I know that whatever your research is, it is, in fact, mead. I will take no questions or objections.
Well, that's good, because you get 2 points because it is mead. Mead has been identified in archaeological digs as being somewhere between 20,000 and 40,000 years old. Big range, but, you know, they're dating mead and digs. Beer may have been invented as long ago as 13,000 years, but the first definitive signs can be found from around 3,500 to 3,100 BCE in what is now Iran.
Let me tell you about the audience.
Tell me about the audience.
The thing that
we
did so much technology set up to make work that you keep forgetting about.
Yes.
Well, the audience was a little bit more split on this one. This was not a dog and cat situation, but 72% of the audience went with mead, 27% with beer. So the audience went with mead being first, which is correct. How many points did the audience get? They get one point
because Liz was correct, so the audience gets 1 point.
What for their a complicated scoring mechanism.
It is. All right. Next up, we are going to Jason. Jason, giving you the easy one. Which came first, the chicken or the egg?
Well, you know, chickens, Glenn, have been around for a very long time, but animals have been laying eggs for much longer than that. So egg, what came first?
Citation needed.
I don't know. Are we talking about modern, tastier chickens? Or
reference acknowledged.
Yeah, reference acknowledged. All right. So, Jason, you're correct. Eggs appeared about 300 million years ago, and chickens are maybe 10,000 years old. So don't eat a 10,000-year-old chicken, though. It is not tastier.
It's tough.
Than a modern chicken.
Dry.
Not modern at all.
Dry.
No. That's right. And the audience, sorry.
This was kind of a trick question, and the audience was overwhelmingly not tricked by it. 90% of people said egg. One person said chicken. And I'm guessing that they parsed the question incorrectly. So the audience gets a single point for egg.
Single point.
And the audience is no racking up points this round, which they didn't really need.
All right. Yes. The last question is going to Annette. Annette, your question is fun. Cucumber pickle or pickled egg? Which came first?
Oh, I feel like I'm going to say pickled egg. This is a wild guess, but it's just because I think in China they do a pickled egg that's very traditional.
The history that I found says cucumber pickles came first. So, which was surprising to me, because I assumed also, so there's records going back as far as 2000 BCE in India, where cucumbers were invented or crossbred as a crop. Pickled eggs are apparently, maybe only go back as far as the 1800s, but certainly, even if they're a little bit older, they don't go back 4,000 years.
What?
So, pickled cucumbers are older. Pickled cucumbers are older.
No one pickled an egg for like 50,000 years.
It's surprising to me as well, but that's apparently.
Technically, given the age of the universe, nobody pickled an egg for like 10 billion years. But then,
Why do you start counting from there?
I don't know, because there's sort of like, I can't remember when you switch over.
Which came first, the pickle or the egg, Glenn? Yeah. Did you say that?
People were doing arrows and stuff, and no one pickled an egg.
No egg fell in a vat of vinegar at some point accidentally, and somebody tasted it and went,
"Oh, this is delicious." They picked it out 20 years. All right, so Tony, what did the audience say about?
Well, you know, the audience was doing great this round, but they were tripped up by this one. The majority, 72%, thought pickled eggs came first. Only the roughly 27% thought cucumbers came first. And they were wrong, which was an upset because the audience was consistently pretty good across the board. Glenn, question that you might edit out later. Do you want to do something with your last backup question as some kind of panelist catch-up point?
All right, yes. This will be only for the panelists. Use the form to submit. We're going to do one last chance here. So here's one extra question just for panelists. Catamaran or kayak, which came first? Please answer in the form.
Do you mean catamaran the fish?
That's not a thing.
No, catamaran the boat.
Because it's catamaran then.
Kayak the boat.
I think I saw Catamaran the Fish open for Hindenburg the Man.
Okay.
Was it a musical?
So answer through the form, please. In the form.
How do you spell? I just spelled catamaran in case I don't want to embarrass myself.
We won't see you spell it, Liz.
No, but they'll know.
It's probably transliterated. So from
Liz, just so you know, a catamaran is a watercraft with two parallel hulls of equal size. They were first invented. Nope, not going to say that part.
Oh
no!
Oh.
Wait, I'm not talking this out. Shush.
No, you're putting it in a form.
I've brought Liz on only to eliminate the best part of Lizzing by not allowing her to talk about her thought process. That was my fiendish plan. This has all been an evil game show, by the way.
Keep it on the inside, Liz. Come
it's
on.
Hard.
Those not watching can see I have a Van Dyke beard. I have a Van Dyke beard, and you can see.
Are you the
man? I am.
The Doctor Who's the master in disguise.
You fools, you've all fallen into my trap of being on this game show.
I mean,
I feel like that every time I do a game show because I almost never win.
You do win sometimes, though.
Once in a while, and it's never at trivia.
Brian's was hard to parse. It looks like we've got answers from everyone except Liz.
Sorry, that's because I can't type a word. There you go.
You can type emojis if you want. That's what I did.
Yeah. I don't know.
All right. So the answers are all in. And so the answer is, oh my goodness, the answer is catamaran. And everyone said kayak.
That's
this
not
is,
true.
It was a trick. I knew it.
That's not true. Look at, check out row 37, Glenn. That's
Brian changed his answer to catamaran.
It is what it is. You parse it how you'd like.
I need clarification here because if you can carve out a log and make a hull, wouldn't you do that before you stuck two of them together?
Well, we also don't pickle eggs.
You're not construing a kayak with a catamaran, are you?
Yeah. How many pickled eggs would fit in a kayak?
That's you're spoiled. Next episode. So the modern catamaran was invented in the second half of the 20th century.
Oh, the tastier one. The
historical version is so old it is actually prehistoric because it was created by sailors in South India and Polynesia. Again, found archaeologically, but there's no specific date because it is so old. Archaeological evidence dates kayaks to about 2000 BCE in the Arctic. So 4,000 years old, but not older than catamarans. Apparently, they're so stable that they are a natural way to build a raft-like boat with an outrigger. So let's just skip the final scores, and I'll just thank the... Tony, how did this all go?
No points for this round?
Brian gets 2 points for that because they had the right answer.
Okay.
And I did it in emojis.
That's what confused me. I thought you were saying mouse... person.
That's a cat.
I did cat, A-M-A, and then running.
Yes, ran.
It makes sense.
Yes. Jason,
Hindenburg, the catamaran. I love it.
Love it. Jason, the key here is to think of the kayak as basically like an evolution of canoe technology.
Yeah, it's like a special
brand of canoe with stuff around it.
I thought about that, and you mentioned Polynesia. I also thought, like, is an outrigger a catamaran or not, but like that is a robot or not question. We don't need to answer that.
Well, there you go. That's a, you're very welcome.
People love boat talk.
Catamaran
all right.
or double.
Well, Glenn, it's time for final scores, and in an exciting,
I'll just be leaving now.
An exciting turn of events that is mainly, I guess I'll take some of it, our fault. The audience has won 15 points.
Oh, hey.
You know, well, the audience actually did pretty consistently solid across the all of the rounds. You know, various panelists had their moments to shine, but the audience were just, you know, slow and steady. 15 points for the audience. Behind that is Jason, 11 points. Liz with 10. Annette with 8. And Brian with 6. And it just shows there's plenty of points in game shows, even if the game shows are pointless.
Well, I think the audience is great, and I think we should also give Jason a shout out for getting all 5 answers in the impossible round.
I was top human.
You're top human in that round. That was the round the audience did not do as well with, and in fact, no one did except Jason, because apparently we've mind-melded. I'm terribly sorry. That's another game show. So, if you'd like to become a member of the Incomparable, so you could be in the audience and play future iterations of this game, I'd be surprised. But if you would, you just go to theincomparable.com. If you would, you just go to theincomparable.com.
And if you would, Glenn, you could just go to theincomparable.com/members.
Really, Jason? I don't know anything about that. And you can find out about all the membership benefits, including listening to shows as soon as they're recorded, ad-free episodes of the flagship Incomparable podcast, listening to shows recorded live like this, where they are not at all shambolic or a mess, or there's long gaps.
This is basically the final edited version. This will be pretty much identical to what we recorded.
It'll be almost identical. And so thank you very much to our contestants, Brian, Liz, Jason, and Annette. Couldn't have done this without you, and I'm very, very sorry. And of course, thank you to Scorekeeper Tony. You are amazing. You're incredible. This show would have been possible without your involvement, and I don't blame you for anything. It's all on me. So maybe next time I'll give you the key code to get out of your room, because again, I can't do it without you. I'm your host, Glenn Fleischman, and you can reach me at pants@theincomparable.com. That's right, pants@theincomparable.com. Tony?
Tune in next time.